Va ora in onda Diplomazia e dintorni, un programma curato e condotto da Stefano Baldi.
Buonasera, but even tonight you will have to listen to Diplomazia Dintorni, to Stefano Baldi in English. It's a great pleasure for me because once again, for those who listened to us last week, they know, once again we have three very nice guests, three colleagues coming from Nordic countries, coming from Sweden and from Finland. And of course, I asked them to introduce themselves. Heikki will start from Finland.
Good evening. My name is Heikki Kahro. I come from the Finnish Ministry for Foreign Affairs in Helsinki.
Johannes.
Hi, my name is Johannes Andreasson. I'm from the Swedish Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Stockholm.
And Dario.
Yes, good evening. My name is Dario Jovic. I'm also at Swedish Ministry of Foreign Affairs, currently based at our embassy in Croatia.
So they are here for a program called the European Diplomatic Program. We won't say more about that, because if you want to know more about that, you can just go back to our podcast and listen, and certainly you should listen to our previous program last week. You will find it in our site, where all the previous programs of Diplomazia and Dintorni are available, and the site is diplomaziadintorni.wordpress.com, and you will know more about our three colleagues and three friends and the program. But sadly, today we will discover more about what a diplomat does, which is the basic of our program in so many different occasions. But this is a special one because we can, you know, more or less hear a bit more from what happens in another country. Are all the diplomatic services equal? Are all the same? Well, equal, I wouldn't touch on that. I would say, are they all the same? Do they operate all in the same way? They have the same logic? And so many other things we can learn. We spoke a lot in previous programs about the Italian structure and the Italian, let's say, operations and mechanisms. And this is a very good occasion to hear more. For example, I have a first question, which is interesting. Last time you mentioned why you started you wanted to be a diplomat and you started this career. How do you enter the career in your country? What do you have to do? Dario, you want to start?
Yes, I can start. I suspect the procedure is pretty similar to your procedure in Italy or in other EU countries. We basically have a process which involves application, CV or resume gets scanned and processed in the foreign ministry, and there is a series of tests. Every year the ministry looks for certain types of people. Certain languages are in focus, and certain academic skills are in focus. So for the year when I applied, they were very interested in lawyers who could speak Russian, which was very good for me and helped me get in, I assume. Now Arabic is very popular, so...
You don't have to study immediately
exactly.
Arabic, since you're already in. Good.
So it varies from year to year, basically.
Johannes, what happened in your year?
They looked for people speaking Russian as well, but also Arabic, and that's how I got in.
Dario mentioned, and then we have the Arabic. That's good.
Fortunately, or perhaps regrettably, you don't have to necessarily use Arabic and remember it afterwards you get in. That's also my case.
But what else do you have as test? I mean, of course, there's a mainstream, as you said, that they might be looking for on that very year. But then what sort of test is it that you have to get in? It's only an interview? Or?
No, first is a written test on a few. You test language skills, you test writing skills, you test general knowledge, English, of course. and also a third language. And after that, there's a full day of interviews and other tests of various kinds. Sometimes they actually have tests where you have to handle an inbox, an email inbox, and sort mails, and because that's part of what you actually do a lot, and you have to manage your time in a good way.
It makes sense in a way. Aiki, what is yours? What is your system in Finland?
I think the system in Finland is pretty same than what it is in Sweden, but I would say it's more stable in the sense that, well, of course, there might be some priorities in recruitment process, but generally speaking, what the ministry is looking for is generalists, people with diverse backgrounds, people with the aptitude required for a diplomatic career, regardless of the educational background. Of course, good language skills are required, and previous experience is a big asset. In Finland, we also have a recruitment process during which there are a number of tests, including writing tests, aptitude tests, meeting with the psychologists, several interviews, and so on and so forth.
I think it's very interesting to see what are the different procedures, because they are similar, but they are different, and they are also quite different from what we have here in Italy. I think we will continue immediately after the first musical piece that we're going to listen to. What is the theme of this broadcast tonight is Moonlight. So we're not going to end at midnight, of course, but Moonlight is still a good way to keep us company in this evening. And of course, all of the pieces will be dealing with this concept or with this situation. And the first, of course, is titled very originally Moonlight, but the undertitle is Claro de Luna, and this is Charlie Hayden. Thank you. great bass player and band leader Charlie Hayden in this Moonlight from the album Nocturne. So we are really into the night thing. We go back to our friends speaking on their experience, and we were talking about, you know, how you enter the ministry, what kind of recruitment. I think it's interesting. One interesting issue which came out from our first part is what are ministries looking for? Are they looking for young people with great knowledge? Let's call them generalists. Or are they mainly looking for some people who really knows about, I don't know, Far East or other countries, so specialists? Of course, the good thing is to be both, but it's kind of contradiction. So how do you feel, what are they looking for and what you really need to be based on your experience? Dario?
I think you said it very well. They want you to be both. Our ministry keeps saying they want generalists, people who are flexible, who are able to work everywhere with everything. But at the end of the day, they want people to have very specific skills. I would say what we also said initially is that the main topic is actually flexibility. They want people who are willing to try new things and to learn different aspects of their work. In our case, I think if you have a language skills which is desirable, Russian or Arabic, if you are have a legal background or is an economist, you're very sought after. But I also know a person who works at the foreign ministry who is a major in arts and specialized in making glass figurines, but speaks very good languages, and he was very well accepted as well.
What is the situation in Finland?
I think.
And what are your feelings? I mean, not only what they.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know the very truth, but I think there are many similarities with the Swedish system, but also some differences. In the Finnish Ministry for Foreign Affairs, there are basically two sorts of substance positions. Diplomats plus specialists, and usually specialists are recruited separately to a certain position because of the expertise they have, whereas diplomats are expected and required to be flexible and willing to move to new areas to out of their comfort zone. But that doesn't mean that the ministry wouldn't value the skill set, the specific skill set that each diplomat brings in when he or she joins the ministry. And that said, the ministry, for example, has been trying to attract economists to join the ministry, as well as lawyers or Russian speakers and Chinese speakers and so on and so forth, because this means that the ministry has a broader set of skills available because of the roster of diplomats.
Johannes, do you have the impression that there is a kind of main academic specialization for those who are recruited? I mean, they mainly come from which area, if there is one which has a majority?
I think the people mainly come from studying political science, and there's also a lot of people with a lawyerly background and similar fields, but I think it's not a requirement in that sense, and I think the ministry would benefit from recruiting people with a broader background. I mean, even as Dario said, people with arts backgrounds or engineers, for that matter. I think that would be interesting and broaden the skill set, the toolbox.
In your system, it is possible to have engineers recruited, because in our system, it is not for the time being. I mean, there are requirements for the competitions. What about in Sweden?
The only requirement is to have a valid academic degree, not shorter than 4 years, and to speak a third language. Those are the only formal requirements. You also have to be a Swedish citizen, of course. Everything else is up for debate, depending on what the ministry needs that specific year.
Aike, in Finland?
I know that in Finland there's at least one ambassador with an engineer degree and one ambassador with a background in agriculture. So there's a broad, there's a diversity of skills and backgrounds represented.
I have one question, which is a very straight one. Let's say that we make a distinction between knowledge being, I don't know, history, legal knowledge, economics, or the scientific knowledges which are useful for our work, and skills, which is, you know, being able to run an office, to motivate the others, so you name it, I mean, all these things. And you have to choose which is more important of the two nowadays for being a good diplomat. You can only choose one. I mean, it doesn't mean that the other, it doesn't exist. But what would you think that it should be more prevalent, how can I say, which is more important of the two? Dario, difficult question.
I would say skills, just initially, especially being a diplomat. Knowledge is something you can require along with other people, but the diplomatic job is so specific that without a certain specific skills, it doesn't matter how much knowledge you have, you will not be able to get the job done at the end of the day, is what I'm thinking.
What about the other two? What do you think? You can even give one straight answer, but you can even elaborate. What do you think?
I have to agree with Dario, but that's reluctantly because I want knowledge to be more important.
Like, it's not an easy thing once you have to choose, huh?
We are one big Nordic family. I have to say skills as well. Diplomatic work and diplomatic profession is pretty much about how to get things done, how to find the right knowledge that you need in order to achieve what you want to achieve.
Of course, we can always say Ministry of Foreign Affairs, they want both. But and which is true, which is certainly true, but sadly, I wanted to see with you, once you have to choose, and I agree on the prevalence of skills nowadays. But the knowledge is certainly extremely... Skills without knowledge, they're not very useful. Okay, let me go again to the moonlight now. We fly to the moon, in other words. That's the title of the next track by Dave Grusin.
Now there, I'm often dreaming of when you'd stop by. Flowers, I'm gone for hours. Imagine. Open up the door, I see your face. as if you've never gone away. Your eyes remain the same as I recall. You tell me how I have not changed. Feel the touch of your hand. So crazy, so in love I am. Imagination, please come true. I'm so in love with you. So in love with you. I see your face as if you've never gone away. Your eyes remain the same as I recall. You tell me how I have not changed. Feel the touch of your hand. So crazy, so in love. Take our hearts, yes, my love, and never let us ever be apart. Imagination, please come true. I'm so in love with you.
Made in Moonlight, Elian Elias. So, and as you know, she's a Brazilian pianist and also singer, as you can see. And again, we have this atmosphere of moonlight, very well described musically, I would say. Let's go back to young diplomats in some countries. What do they do? And we examine the, you know, the entry point and the requirements. And I think I would be very interested to hear from you on what is the process once you're in. I mean, how long you stay in the ministry before you get to your first posting, if there is any rule about this, and what kind of posting, if you have any kind of obligation, you know, in to go somewhere or for how long. I think it's interesting to see that we do a lot of traveling, but I think there are behind some rules which are not always comfortable ones. Aike, you're still at the ministry, 2 years, so what is going to happen to you?
For young diplomats, it is usually the system goes so that you would expect to spend the first 2 or 3 years in the headquarters, at least usually in 2 different departments, to get experience from the different fields of activities of the ministry. But some young diplomats might also leave, be posted abroad earlier if there's a need for example, in some hardship embassy. It might be difficult to find motivated and willing diplomats to go there. So it's possible for young diplomats to be posted also early. As regards the general process of being assigned abroad, we have internal recruitment system. Diplomats apply for positions in embassies, and they can apply for several positions,
they can apply for any embassy.
Basically any embassy, but of course there are certain positions are for junior diplomats, certain positions are for more senior diplomats. And the ministry is nowadays quite flexible. I've understood that in previously it has been quite strict in the sense that the ministry has may have obliged you to go somewhere, but nowadays they are really want to know whether you are motivated to go, whether you whether what would be best for you and your family and so on and so forth.
Dario, do you have any obligation? I mean, you are forced to go somewhere when you are young, or you can choose, like Aiki said, whatever you want.
I think,
or whatever you wish.
Then our ministry also doesn't like to use the word force, but encouraged or expected. I think, as a junior diplomat, you are expected to be willing to go to a hardship posting 1 year after your 1 year after joining the ministry. And that hardship posting could be up to 3 years. After that, we are allowed to do two postings abroad after one another. So you can be out for 6-7 years before you have to go home for another 3 years. So that's pretty much the procedure. Like Heikki said, it's the same way. We apply for positions. You're allowed to apply for 12 positions each time.
12.
Yes, you're allowed to see the lists of all the applicants for the different positions, and you're allowed to see the ranking of the human resource department of the different positions. So you see where they've put you on the different lists and why you haven't been chosen for a certain position.
I think this is a not always an easy thing to convince everybody, because if you have some popular places, then there will be many people disappointed, and to explain to them. Johannes, even at the beginning you have a lot of competition to go to certain places, or there are so many different minds and so many different expectations that it's quite easy, in fact, to get what you really want? I can tell you that I'm sure that later on it becomes more and more difficult anyway. So I wonder what it is at the beginning.
It depends on what you want exactly. Some people want to go to places in Europe, which is usually more difficult to get. Or other people like to go to smaller embassies further away from Sweden, which is a completely different kind of experience, but in my view, that's where I want to go.
Where did you go?
I went to Jakarta in Indonesia.
So you walk the talk in this case.
Well, it's Indonesia is nice, very interesting.
So you were not disappointed from what you expected because I think once you ask for a place, you don't know exactly what is expecting you there. You have an idea. So do you have the impression from your experience that most of the time, no matter what your idea was, you don't get disappointed, or sometime, even hearing from other colleagues, you might get disappointed?
I think you're right in that you can expect things, but usually you can never, it really doesn't matter, because it's never how you expect it. And it's usually good wherever you go, if that makes sense.
It does, I think. It depends on what is your attitude. I think that's very important. Once you get there, not before, once you get there. Okay, let's go for the next piece. Next piece is the one that I had introduced before, which is Dave Grusin. So I was wrong to tell you it was Dave Grusin before we listened to Leanne Lias. Now we do listen to Dave Grusin, which is Fly Me to the Moon. In other words, Dave Grusin. Thank you. Dave Grusin, Fly Me to the Moon, in other words. Let's go back to our knowledge of the diplomatic career and the diplomatic, let's say, different positions and different phases of the career. And we are talking about moving and new places. And this is something which certainly our parents understands, and moving all the time. That's the only thing, as we said in the previous broadcast. But not. I think even for diplomats, not all the world is the same. We look, you know, at a new posting as a place where we will spend 2, 3, 4 years. So it's important. So I really would like to ask you if, not only among young diplomats, but taking into account all the career, all the other colleagues, are there postings which are more popular, where really everybody wants to go, where you have a long line of waiting list, or it is an even distribution because, you know, we are all different? What is the situation, Dario?
Well, everyone wants to go to Rome, of course. Rome always never has the problems filling their vacancies. But apart from that, it's the classical. It's New York, London, Paris are always very popular. But thankfully, the ministry has enough adventurous people in it to apply for tough positions in Asia, Middle East, Africa, and so on. I think it depends. It's why it's so important to attract different kinds of people, to make sure that this willingness and this interest in different parts of the world also exists. So for me, I think it's very dangerous to say the most popular place.
And Aiki, is it the same in your case? And if yes, why do you think these particular places are so popular?
I think it's quite universal for all foreign ministries that Western European capitals, as well as North American embassies and missions in North America, are very popular and sought after. Of course, one thing might be that in big European or American capitals, you can live pretty much the same life you live in your home country. High Western living standards, as well as there's a lot of interesting. There's an interesting agenda also in the works, meaning that a lot of happening. These are embassies that are closely looked at from the ministry. These are important embassies and missions in which you can really feel that you do something meaningful. But that doesn't mean that also in our smaller embassies further away, say in some emerging countries, the work can be really interesting and meaningful, and there are also many people who want to especially to go outside of this North America, Europe area.
And Janis, in your opinion, young diplomats in general, not necessarily you, do they prefer as first or second posting to be in a place where they, you know, they are number two, or they are anyway exposed very much and they have more responsibilities, or they more tend to go to bigger places where they can learn from the others? They're not necessarily in front line, even though generally you're always in front line, even at the UN New York. But what do you think is the main feeling? If any, maybe not. I don't know.
I think at least the ministry want young diplomats to go to postings where they have to do a lot of different things, like being number two in a smaller embassy far away from the home country. And the diplomats themselves have maybe not as much to say about where they posted the first time. But I just want to add one thing about what Heikki talked about earlier, and what about where people want to go, because it's one thing that we haven't talked about is that you're not only making these decisions yourself. A lot of time you have a partner, and that partner has very specific ideas on where to go. And that's a tricky part being a diplomat, that you have to also account for. You have to negotiate with your family as well, not only the ministry. So I just wanted to add that point.
I think you raised a very interesting point that I wanted to touch with you and on the family, and we will do about that in the next part of our program. Now we are ready for another track, again linked to Moonlight. The title is Moonlight and Shadows, and you have the great singer Diane Shore.
Darling, you in my arms, and the melody from a bamboo tree sounds so sweet. Even in shadow, baby, I feel no alarm. You belong to me, I belong to you, in your arms. Close to my heart, darling, you will always be never, 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 never. Darling, I feel no one near. Let me hold you tight in the jungle night. Oh, my dear.
Diane Shore, Moonlight and Shadows, from a CD which was, you can say it, blues for sure. This was certainly a great blues. About blues, you know, not necessarily negative, but certainly sometime problematic. It was introduced before by Johannes, one element which is important, I think, in the diplomatic life of every diplomat is the family, because of many reasons. We touch on that, on choosing the place where to go, and it's an element which counts a lot. Dario, in your case, how did you feel about being influenced by the family at large? Because the family is not only the partner or the wife, can be the parents, can be some other situations. How important are they in what you have lived up to now, at least?
Yes, exactly. I'm currently not married, so I don't have to think about that problem yet, of having to negotiate my postings with anyone in particular. But I know that thing will come, and that will be a challenging factor, I'm sure. I've seen it in colleagues. Speaking of the extended family, I have, like you mentioned, had a difficult time explaining to my parents and my younger brother the why I'm doing the job I'm doing, and I'm also maybe even subconsciously not looking for postings very far abroad, because of my family and my relatives, because I want to stay close to them.
And in another element, I would like to ask it to Aiki in this case, for to know what is the Finnish position or anyway activities. I think spouses are, you know, a great element for going somewhere, not going. And of course, spouses more and more have their own life, which is how it should be. They work. Is there any activity or any benefit that the ministry has set up, you know, to make the life of spouses easier once they move to one place, like working or being used one way or another in the activities of the embassies abroad? Is there any kind of measure which is taken?
This is a very pertinent and topical question, which is much discussed with the colleagues. I think one example of what the ministry is doing is that it's negotiating on behalf of Finland with some other countries on agreements that make it possible for diplomatic spouses to work, because there are still a great number of countries in which the spouses of diplomats are not allowed to get a work permit, which means that they have to just stay home, or a maximum what they can do is to do some voluntary work. But more and more often, and it's pretty much the norm nowadays for young diplomats, that the spouses have independent careers, maybe successful careers in whatever field, and for that reason it's very important to give such possibilities to make it easier for the spouses also to work abroad.
Of course, you're all too young to think of kids, of children, but I'm sure that you have heard of what happens, you know, to other colleagues with children. How difficult it is, and this I'd like Johannes to say something if he wants. How difficult do you think it is then to manage, for example, you know, the school history or the different faces of every children in the different places where you go? What do you hear from your colleagues? What are the, of course, there are opportunities and there are difficulties. How do you see it?
Since I don't have kids myself, I can't answer from that point. I hear what colleagues said, but I like to answer from the perspective that I lived abroad with my parents when I was young. So I have some experience from the kids' side. And
so that's personal experience is even more valuable.
maybe so. But that experience is that it's both good and bad. For one thing, you have you get to know other countries very well. You have an easier time adapting to new environments. On the other hand, when you go home after being abroad, you feel different from your classmates. You're not viewed as kind of similar to the other classmates, and you feel yourself that you have another culture in your body as well, and that's tricky, but it's also a good thing in some
way. Yeah, as in every occasion, you have to take the best out of it, but you must be aware of the so many complications that you can have. You cannot solve everything, of course, but being aware, I think, is important. And one of the many things that people don't know about our job, I think, is this kind of, let's say, side effects that you can have. It's part of the myths. We spoke before about the many myths. There's one myth that I would like to see with you. It was mentioned even before. It's about making money, right? So generally, especially thinking of the past, probably the diplomats are seen as people, you know, leading a, you know, certain high standard life. And when I say high, it means not decent, because we are still representing a country, but making a lot of money. Certainly this is not true in our system. I think for you is the same. But do you have this perception in your country as well?
Yes, very much so. There is a very wrong perception of diplomats in Sweden, I think everywhere, basically. It's based on James Bond movies and crime novels. It's perceived as attending a lot of receptions, having champagne every evening, and social gatherings in a very exclusive environment, which I do not deny that we attend a lot of functions, but one has to keep in mind that they often happen after work in the evening. They are not paid working hours. And I think all of us have things we would rather do with our spare time than to attend functions with colleagues and people we do not know. So, I mean, some realism would be very helpful in that. As far as money goes, no, we do not get rich by working as diplomats, but one cannot complain, because if the goal is to work rich, I don't think one should work for the government in any case.
No, I think the picture you gave is very fair, and it's applicable in all our countries. We have to do more to explain what we do. In a way, we are also doing this tonight. Small things will help. And not to complain, but just to be more objective. Next piece of music, Moonlight, is the title, just Moonlight. And the artist is saxophone player Kenny G. Thank you. And this was Kenny G. It's incredible saxophone with Moonlight. And we are getting to the end of this, well, I would say, two broadcasts, not only today, but even the previous one that we had 1 week ago. And please go and listen to it if you were not had the chance 1 week ago. I think you will discover a lot that we talked about with our three friends, three colleagues, Johannes, Dario and Aiki, coming from Sweden and from Finland. I really thank you. I hope you enjoyed it. Dario?
This was so much fun. I'm speechless and I can't wait to hear how we sound. Thank you for having us.
Yes, Dario said rightly so. This gives me the opportunity to remind to all of you that you will be able to listen even to this broadcast in a couple of days, let's say, on the site as a podcast. The site is diplomaziadintorni.wordpress.com. Johannes, what was your experience in radio, these two opportunities?
It was a lot of fun. Thanks for giving me this opportunity. It was my first time on radio, so this is really not what I expected when I landed in Rome to be on a radio show, but it was a wonderful experience, so thank you.
Okay, I hope this will be another good reason to remember this trip to Rome. Mikey?
It was a great experience. Thanks for the invite and thanks for the great questions that also made me think about things. I mean, it's really made also appreciate this exciting career that we're all living.
So I hope that this talk that we had will be appreciated also by the other colleagues in the EDP program. They will listen to this probably as a podcast. But thank you. Really thank you, because it was nice chat. And I'm sure that all the also Italian young people that generally listen to this will have learned more about this big family of diplomats and big family of Italian, in this case Finnish and Swedish and European diplomats. So thank you very much, and sure, we will meet somewhere in the world. I'm sure that's what's good about diplomats. They generally have the opportunity to meet again somewhere. Okay, thank you very much to all our listeners, and of course our next appointment is for next Tuesday. That's going to be in Italian, so for those who are scared, but I think nobody now is scared of listening to English, we will shift back to Italian. And of course this is Stefano Baldi from Radio Luis with Diplomazia Dintorni. See you next Tuesday.
Avete ascoltato Diplomazia e dintorni, un programma curato e condotto da Stefano Baldi.